Chapter 15. They slipped through Faroon Hall's warded doors just as dusk fell, stabling the horses as quietly as they could in the deserted manor, and warding the gate tightly before they retired. They deprived themselves of light until they were secured inside of the refuge tower, behind three sets of locked doors and fresh wards. "We'll stay here tonight," Rondell ordered, when the last bolt was thrown. "We can scry the route to Maramore tomorrow." Tyndall nodded and went upstairs. Elsie, her eyes streaming with tears, went to the little garderobe on the first floor, where she began sobbing. Rondell stripped off his sweat-soaked, blood-splattered armor and left it in a heap by the thick wooden door, in case of need, then ascended the staircase as much to get away from the sound of the miserable girls crying as to seek a basin in which to wash away the filth of a filthy day. Tyndall was on the second floor, helping himself to a pint of grog from the tower's stores, before tending to his wounds or the dirt on his face. Rondell was about to pass by and leave his fellow to his own thoughts when Tyndall looked up and set a second glass down beside the first. Rondell was reluctant at first. The adrenaline that coursed through his blood had left him exhausted, now that they were safe. While the refuge at Faroon was well warded and secure, he still didn't feel as if he could relax. But then he saw the glint in Tyndall's eyes, and he realized that his fellow knight needed company, not solitude, to fight away the memory of the day. He couldn't turn away from a comrade in need like that, not even Tyndall. Only one drink, he promised himself, but he could not deny that he looked forward to the liquor washing away the taste of blood, dust, and bile from his mouth. Wordlessly, Tyndall poured the clear liquid into the two small earthenware cups. Without libation or salute, both lads drained them. Only when the drink burned a trail of warmth down his gullet did he feel able to break the silence. "Good work today," he said sincerely, if hoarsely. "The siege worm, especially. But all of it. The attack, the retreat, the spellcraft, the swordplay. You proved yourself a worthy mage knight today," he admitted grudgingly. "Sire Kay and Master Min could not have done better." Tyndall looked surprised but troubled by the praise. "Me? You carried off that evacuation like you were Lewin leading the sacred herds." He paused a moment and winced at the memory. "Too bad about Alwer, though," he said quietly. "We were so close," agreed Rondell sadly. Tyndall filled their glasses again and Rondell found it at his lips before he remembered his resolution to stick with one. "To Alwer," he said, a moment before he drained his glass. "May he find his way to his ancestors in peace." Tyndall nodded in agreement, and they drank. Two drinks on an empty stomach, no matter how gratifying, made Rondell's head spin a bit, particularly after the exertions of the day. "I'm going to go upstairs and clean up. You want to start supper? I don't think Belsie is going to be up for it. I saw a smoked pork shoulder in the larder when I was rooting around for this." Tyndall nodded. "I'll hack some off. I don't think we should chance a fire, though," he added. "Wood smoke would be too difficult to disguise." "Cook it by magic, then," Rondell agreed dully. "I don't care if we have to gnaw it off the bone. I need to wash my face," he said lamely, and headed upstairs. A glance outside an arrow slit on the landing showed him that it had begun to rain. That was good. The rain would obscure their track further by washing away their scent. It would also discourage too many goblin patrols. The furry buggers didn't particularly like the rain. Besides, he reasoned, they would have their hands full with the new bands of escaped slaves and the rampant siege worm roaming the countryside. Surely they would abandon their search, he reasoned. On the third floor he found a ewer, basin, and a slip of soap, so he indulged in sponging himself clean. But if there were tears in the water he discarded through the arrow slit, not even Rondell could tell. He was drained, exhausted, and spent. As much as they'd gained in the day for the mission as a whole, losing Alwer had made the whole thing seem like a defeat. He came down the stairs, cleansed and resolute, if no less tired. Tyndall was smoking a pipe and absently stirred an iron kettle of pork and potatoes that he'd heated near to boiling by magic. Belsie was sitting quietly under the mage light, stiffly stripping down her crossbow the way Rondell had shown her. She barely glanced up at him when he came in. Tyndall spooned out the stew into wooden bowls and added a strip of hardtack to each. The meal passed in near silence. The question of Belsie's disposition loomed over all three of them. Rondell found both of his companions stealing guilty glances toward him, then looking away before he could catch their eye. It made him uncomfortable, more uncomfortable than he already was. But if there was anything to be said that hadn't been already, he couldn't think of it. "I'm going to turn in," he announced finally. "I think we all need some sleep. I think we can dispense with the watch. We've warded the place. We'll awaken if anything tries to get inside the walls," he reasoned to himself as much as anyone. He dragged himself upstairs without waiting for a response, and then made up a bed for himself in one corner of the tower out of his cloak and a few dusty blankets. But once he laid his head down, despite how much his body ached with exhaustion, sleep refused to come. It was Belsey's fate that weighed on him, he realized. Losing Alwa so suddenly and violently had been a shock, but that was not what was tormenting him. Knowing he would have to do something about the girl on the morrow was the demon that chased sleep away. He stared into the darkness above his head and toyed with the idea of calling Master Minolan mind to mind, or even Lady Pentandra. This sort of thing was well within her domain. But he knew doing that would be pushing the burden onto someone else's shoulders. No matter how dreadful it was to bear himself, the idea of forcing someone else to bear it for him was abhorrent. He could not ask Minolan or Pentandra, or even Tyndall, for advice on this. He was the commander, and this was an issue. She was an issue within his command. It was his responsibility, and he alone had to live with the consequences. He and Belsey. He felt the beginnings of mind-to-mind contact, and desperately hoped it was Pentandra or Minolan. But it was just Tyndall. "What? I've been thinking about Belsey. I'll contain my shock. What if she just slipped away? If somehow she..." "No, Tyndall," Rondell said with a mental sigh. "You aren't holding this goat, remember?" There was a long pause. "Just thought I'd call it to your attention," Tyndall finished glumly, as he climbed the stairs and made himself a bed in the opposite corner. He rolled up a spare blanket for a pillow and pulled his cloak over him. The cool Gilmoran autumn wasn't nearly as bad as Seven Doors, and in Beauvoir they'd have snow by now, but it still required a bit of wool against the night. Rondell did his best to ignore Tyndall and go to sleep. Instead, tortured thoughts of all he had seen and all he had felt churned in his mind, until they were all banished by a creak on the stairs. Belsey. He thought that she would take advantage of the more comfortable second floor the boys had yielded to her. It was less drafty, but he listened as she walked across the creaky floor and paused. He automatically invoked Maidsight to watch her. She hovered at the top of the stairs. For a terrified moment, Rondell thought she might want to speak to him again, perhaps plead with him about her fate. He nearly called a cat's eye spell, which would have revealed much more detail to him, but he didn't, for once appreciative of the concealing darkness. He let Maidsight drop too, and then closed his eyes altogether. He listened as the steps moved in another direction, and Rondell realized that Belsey was headed toward where Tyndall was bedded down. Part of him was relieved, another part of him became cold, his heart hardening at the thought. He could hear whispers, almost audible, and well within the range of the long ears, but he made no effort to discern them. He didn't want to know what they were talking about. He could guess. Feeling humiliated and rejected, he tried to calm his angry mind by reciting various brutal hymns to Duin in his head. Better than spells, he decided. He might accidentally cast something nasty, the way he felt. He had nearly drifted off to sleep when he heard another creak, and then a shadow loomed over him in the darkness. A feminine shadow. "Sir Rondell?" she whispered hesitantly. "Are you awake?" "What is it, Belsey?" he asked tiredly, with exaggerated patience. She didn't answer, or rather she answered by crouching down and sliding into his bedding beside him. She wore nothing, he discovered. Her bare skin smelled of fresh soap and dried herbs. "What are you doing?" he whispered. "Say nothing, my lord," she pleaded in the darkness. "Ask no questions. Speak no words," she commanded. Before he could consider responding, her mouth was on his. "Tyndall?" he squeaked, mind to mind, in a panic. "What?" "Shut up and be a goddamn knight," came the harsh reply. It was a command, not a suggestion. Rundle had a hard time doing that with Belsie's soft, compliant body plastered against his own. It was the fulfillment of weeks of fantasies and dreams, and his body rejoiced with every fresh kiss. Yet Rundle's mind was in turmoil, still reeling from the rejection and anger she'd inspired. The entanglement of her deceit tainted the first of her kisses, but soon Rundle's resolve crumbled, allured by the soft promise of her femininity. Her hands were soft and cool and very busy as she undressed him in the darkness. At first he just lay there passively and let her work at the laces, so dazed was he by confusion over her actions. Why was she there? Because she felt obligated? Because she wished to sway judgment? Because she felt scared and alone and wanted comfort? Because she honestly liked him? He was grateful for her admonition not to speak. He had 1,000 questions, and he feared the answer to every one. But then some part of his mind rejected his rejection, citing the soft, warm, intoxicating creature removing his tunic and quietly asking him to move over as a compelling reason to do so. He'd nearly been killed today, as had she, and her lips were like a glass of honey-rimmed mead. A knight knew that mead was for celebrations, he remembered dully. That seemed like enough reason for him to abandon his misgivings and cooperate with Ishi's blessing. Belsie was hesitant but determined when she began, penitent and apologetic. But as he began to respond to her actions, she renewed her efforts and her kisses with enthusiasm, particularly her attack on his neck. She crawled on top of him, just to lay there with her breast pressed against his hairy chest, and nuzzled her nose into his neck below his ear.
"I feel so safe right now,"
she sighed, her body going limp on top of his. Rundle didn't respond. He wasn't sure what to say, and now really wasn't the time for conversation. But it seemed to banish some of the lingering doubt about whether she truly wanted to be with him, and why. He knew she did not love him. He knew she favoured Tyndall more. He knew that her giving herself to him might be a bribe, or an attempt to manoeuvre. But that is not what his instincts told him as she twisted and turned in his arms. Here was a very, very frightened girl, who had suffered a brush with death and was desperate for comfort and security. He was not her jailer here, nor her commander, nor her lord to her common blood. He was merely a strong man who could make the vulnerable girl feel safe, and her actions were, in part at least, inspired by the pure gratitude she bore him and her desire to reward and indulge it. That he understood, that he could accomplish. He didn't have to be cute or wealthy or brave or handsome. He just had to be here and be her protector for a little while. He considered what Tyndall had said about confidence during their errantry, about it being the feeling of assuredness you got when you knew what was going to happen. Regardless of anything else, he knew he could give this poor, mixed-up girl a sense of protection to cling to. He considered saying something stupid and funny to break the tension, like he would after an awkwardly stolen kiss. Instead, he kissed her back, feeling his accumulated rage and anger mingle with his feelings of victory and success, and all of that transformed with the touch of her lips into passion. Overwhelming passion. His heart thudded like he was in battle, and his hands traced her lines as he delighted in her reaction. The fear, the rejection, the suspicion, the sense of betrayal he'd felt for her, evaporated in the face of the inundation of pure animalistic passion he felt now that he had her in his arms. In moments, he was as naked as she was, the cool of the night forgotten as he began to explore her body with his hands. His fingers felt in the dark all that he had dreamed of about the girl, her rounded ass, her perfectly curving back, the nape of her neck, the firm, resilient and utterly soft skin of her breasts. He was gentle, if firm, and he noted with pleasure that his hands had her quivering with excitement as they sought to commit her body to memory. She too became caught up in passion when his hands found her most sacred parts, just before her hands found his. Eagerly, their hands sped the connection they both sought. Their mutual passion became a cleansing wave, scouring away the encrustations of doubt and confusion he'd borne so long. Regardless of everything else, there was something right, something pure in this. He understood Ishi's blessing now, he realized in part of his mind. He understood the magnificent, restorative power a woman's touch could have on a man, not just his body, but to his soul. They coupled feverishly at first, with a terrible intensity that threatened to overwhelm them. But Rondel realized the danger of such a precipitous course and eased her pace, instead, into one of consistent but compelling desire. He chanced Maidsight a few times to monitor how Belsie was enjoying herself, and she seemed just as engaged and excited as he was. He relaxed and allowed his body to enjoy itself, and hers. He did not know when Tyndall joined them, but after they had sated their desires a first time, and were beginning a second, his fellow knight and apprentice quietly appeared over them in the darkness. Rondel was confused. Was the haystack actually jealous? Until Tyndall also slid into the impromptu nest, helpfully bringing another blanket.
"Scoot over," he whispered to Belsie.
Rondel struggled a moment with a surge of emotion so strong and vicious they threatened to accidentally be expressed magically. He felt a sense of possessiveness and territoriality with Belsie after such an intimate moment, but felt her heart quicken under his breast, and he saw the gleam in her eye by Maidsight, and he knew that she favoured the inclusion. She was not his, after all. She had shared herself with no promise or expectation, with barely any words. Rondel tensed as his fellow joined them, but he let the tension dissipate. He decided he cared not if she favoured Tyndall the more, or if she was posturing for escape or angling for favour in his decision. As sweet and attractive as Belsie was, she had proven herself unworthy of his permanent affections. This was not a woman he would wed, he knew, nor did he care to give her his heart any more than he had already. Other parts, he decided, he was far more willing to share.
"Scoot over," repeated a half-naked Tyndall. "It's cold, but I brought a bottle of spirits."
Belsie giggled and did just that, making Rondel move too. He started to get resentful again when her hand stayed him.
"No maiden was ever so fortunate as to have the favour of two such magnificent knights," she announced in a contented voice after she took a sip of the small bottle. "Thank you, gentlemen, for your bravery today, and all the days before. Whatever may come, you have my respect, admiration, and gratitude for that."
It was a speech Lady Arcella would have made, Rondel realized. It sounded natural coming out of her mouth. He looked across her naked breasts at Tyndall's grinning face. He was willing to take her declaration at face value. Rondel sighed and decided he would do the same. It just kept things less complicated. Rondel watched idly for a few moments as Belsie mounted Tyndall, as she had him, and he enjoyed the vicarious thrill of observing her passion from a different perspective. In Maidsight, he saw the wild, untamed look on her face as she found Tyndall's manhood and seated herself on it, a moan of satisfaction escaping her lips. He watched them couple for a while, appreciating the act from a spectator's vantage, until it began to have an effect on him. He rose silently, and both of the lovers looked up, confused, momentarily stopping their lovemaking to look at him. Belsie looked more fearful. Tyndall looked more curious. Rondel had a brief desire to let his suppressed anger and rage overtake him, but that was not his first or strongest inclination. Wordlessly, he bent to kiss Belsie, who continued her gyrations atop of Tyndall. Indeed, her movements became more excited the longer he held the kiss, until he felt her hands once more wander to his body, her skin nearly aglow with excitement. Her desires had gone from apologetic to grateful to enthusiastically eager, and she demonstrated that by her willingness to entertain both of the lads at the same time. Indeed, Rondel noted, she seemed to enjoy that most of all. Rondel almost reached out to Tyndall, mind to mind, during their long, lusty night, but something held him back. This moment was to be shared without magic, he decided. He could feel Tyndall's participation in the tryst, and he even reacted when his rival counseled a change of positions and manner of fulfillment. But the feelings and emotions were too intense for mere words. Ishi's blessing, Rondel decided, was to sand away such rough emotions under the relentless refreshment of the pleasures she ordained. They lay together late into the night, enjoying the safety and security and the intense intimacy of each other. But in the morning, the three were quiet as they dressed in the chill and prepared to return to Maramore to reunite with the rest of the unit.
"That was fun last night," Tyndall sent to Rondel as they saddled the horses.
"Yeah," Rondel replied non-committally.
Then he had to grin despite himself. It had been a whole lot of fun, he admitted to himself. He felt
renewed. I enjoyed it. I think Belsie did too. Oh, no, she did, agreed Tyndall confidently. So why did she go to your bed first? Rondell asked, hating himself for feeling compelled to. You want to know the truth? Tyndall asked, after a pause. Rondell considered. He wished he was the kind of man who could just accept convenient fictions, but he wasn't.
Yes, I want to know the truth.
Well, she said she didn't come to plead for her life, Tyndall said. She said she was just scared. She felt rejected and depressed after Alwa's death, and she was looking for comfort.
With you,
Rondell finished dully. Tyndall paused and considered.
Yes, with me,
he admitted. I'm sorry, but that's how it happened. I didn't ask her to. So why didn't she stay with you? Why did she come to my bed? Because I told her I wouldn't even consider such a thing with her after she had treated you so cruelly. She knows you have feelings for her, but she stepped all over them the moment I showed up. That touched my sense of honour.
You have a sense of honour?
But wait, you told her no, because of how she treated me. I told her that I wouldn't so much as speak with her intimately until she was square with you. I won't favour a girl who treats my friends like that. It's disloyal.
I... Thanks,
Rondell replied, for want of anything else he could think of.
And she does like you, you idiot,
Tyndall insisted. She just likes me more.
Asshole.
Lady Arcella, your mount is saddled and waiting, Tyndall called formally. He turned to Rondell. You scried the route?
It's deserted,
he said, taking the saddle. We should be back at Matamor in a few hours. Less if we have to run for our lives. They walked the horses, keeping them on the dry edges of the road and not the muddy channel in the centre, and barely spoke in the cool autumn morning. Rondell welcomed the silence. As pleasant as the previous evening was, he had a major decision to make about the girl who had been so giving of herself, and he realized how he had complicated his decision even further. The short journey back to Matamor passed without incident, until they came to Matamor village. There they were challenged by a sentry, an armored man with a crossbow, hiding in a blind made from a burned-out hovel. He accepted their passwords and blew a very short single note on the horn he carried before letting them pass. Matamor looked almost like home when they saw it appear in the distance, but once they passed the gate, it looked less like home and a lot more like a military camp. While the lads were on their mission, an unexpected party arrived from the south. Marshal Brendol, on a surprise inspection and resupply tour. The guard at the gate informed them of his presence. He had arrived with 100 commandos, part of the 3rd, who would be temporarily based at Matamor before spreading out to the other outposts in Gilmora. Rondell looked around in amazement. The courtyard bustled with activity, and the stables were beyond capacity. And with Marshal Brendol here.
Take Lady Arcella to her quarters,
Rondell ordered Tyndall in a low voice.
Keep her there for now.
But I... Belsie began, her eyes open wide at the press of activity. I have to brief the Marshal, Rondell explained quickly in a low voice. I have a lot of briefing to do, actually, after that raid. It might be a while before we discuss your case. Just stay in your room, and stay quiet while I handle this. Listen to him, Belsie, Tyndall urged, just above a whisper. He's smarter than you and me put together, and he knows what to do. Rondell tried to look confident at the compliment. He was surprised at Tyndall's assessment, but then he realized he was just trying to make her feel better. He wasn't trying to encourage Rondell. That was almost a relief. If Tyndall started being respectful and conciliatory to him, it might serve as proof of madness. He relaxed, handed his reins to a stable boy. When the hell did they get a stable boy? And entered the re-inhabited great hall of the manor. With the additional men, the place was crowded. Rondell wondered how the suddenly overtaxed kitchen would struggle to feed them all. Walvin was standing near the fireplace, speaking with a group of men who Rondell assumed were his comrades from the 3rd Commando. His squadmate saw him and beamed. "This is Commander Sir Rondell of Sevendor, gentlemen," he introduced Rondell, pulling him forward by his hand. "Sir Rondell is the Night Mage in command of this outpost for the moment. My lord, it pleases me to present Ancient Oscad and Sergeants Wreath and Drafan." Rondell found himself bowing to 3 men much older than he. The point was noticed. "Begging your pardon, my lord," Oscad, a large, well-muscled, balding man in his early 30s, said, with only a token trace of apology in his voice. "But aren't you more of an age to be tending the horses, not commanding them?" Rondol could appreciate why the man was sceptical. There were plenty of young snots whose pedigree got them a command he knew, not their experience. It would be easy enough to assume that's how Rondol got his. But if Oscad didn't know who Rondol was, then he must have just arrived. There was a time for modesty and a time for boldness, as Sire Kay was fond of saying, and meeting a military subordinate you may command was a time for the latter. Timidity earned you no respect when meeting a man for the first time. If he was a good ancient, and Rondol could only assume he was, based on what he knew of the new royal commandos, then he was right to be sceptical. "I've done my time with shitwork," Rondol dismissed. "I'm just an up-jumped bastard warmage, so don't kiss my ass too hard. I work for a living." "You've seen battle?" asked Wreath, in such a conversational tone that it subtextually implied a challenge. Rondol responded coolly, as he knew he should. "Today? No. But my second and I just eliminated an enemy depot a half-day's ride north of here yesterday, and we destroyed a few patrols a few days before. It's been a quiet week." He was just as casual. It seemed to impress the men, but it didn't end the challenge. "So you've only seen fights with Gavani, then?" asked Drafan, a slender, dark-haired man in his late 20s. A veteran campaigner, if Rondol was a judge. "Never against humans." Rondol fixed the man with a steely stare. "Only Gavani? Humans? A few times. And I understand why you might not think a few scrugs are very noteworthy, but they're just part of this war. Soldier, may I ask how many dragons you've faced? Or shall we limit our count to trolls?" Drafan looked startled and had no reply, but his mates laughed uproariously. Drafan joined in after a moment. He might be seen as merely a liar of the First Order, but Rondol knew his presentation had been convincing, even if the man doubted the truth of his deeds. "No offence meant, Commander," Oscad assured him with a grin. "Just getting to know our officers. Walvin has mentioned you've run a model operation here. He just didn't mention your lack of experience." He meant his age, Rondol knew. "Ancient. I've been fighting goblins on and off for almost 3 years," Rondol explained, "when I wasn't learning magic on the fly or cramming my skull full of useful stuff. I dare say I've seen more blood than most men twice my age, but that doesn't mean I know what the hells I'm doing." "If you and your mate destroyed an enemy installation yesterday," Drafan observed, "you must be faking it pretty well." That caught Rondol short. The last 2 days had felt like a running disaster, but when viewed like that, "I'll catch up with you gentlemen after I've spoken with the Marshal," he promised, "and if there's a keg of beer or a bottle of spirits in this dump, we'll drain it." "One more thing before you go, begging your pardon," Oscad said, catching his elbow and speaking earnestly. "Rumour has it that the Scruggs are using mutts now in force. Any truth to that?" That was something Ron felt he could speak with some authority, owing to his last encounter with them. "All too true, and they are bigger than any cur you've laid eyes on," Rondol assured. "Fast, too. Riders carry bows, javelins, swords, and bolos. They work in packs. We faced one yesterday." "Any advice?" the ancient asked thoughtfully. Rondol appreciated that. Here was a man of his craft. "Remember," he said after considering a moment, "they're big, mean dogs, but they're just dogs. They act like dogs. Apart from using magic, you can distract them or confuse them. They hate high-pitched sounds, like dogs, and even though they're vicious, they have their weaknesses. When they're attacking in relays, you defend in relays. Attack the mutts, not the riders. Don't let them get on either side of you. Oh, and get your hands on all the demon pepper powder you can. They hate that stuff. It burns their eyes and confuses their noses." He hoped the advice was helpful, he thought to himself, as he tiredly mounted the stairs toward his office, where he'd been told the Marshal awaited him. It had been dearly won, but perhaps if it saved some of his comrades, poor Alwa's sacrifice might mean something after all. The rest of the day was filled with meetings and briefings with the Marshal and the officers of the Third Commando, as well as a walking inspection of Maramore and an in-depth discussion about the local situation over maps. By midnight, Marshal Brendel was satisfied that this advanced base was well-chosen and well-maintained, and he retired after commending Rondol on it. But that did not end his day. Then he had to make further detailed reports, mind to mind, to Commander Turlaman and Master Minilan about the raid and its results, especially in regard to the siege worms and their capabilities. By the time he finished, and he stumbled into his bed, it was the darkest part of the night. He did not wake until mid-morning, when Tyndall brought him a plate and a bottle of ale. "You've got the whole manor abuzz," he confided in his fellow knight, as Rondal gratefully ate breakfast. "I don't know what you said to those commanders when you came in, but everyone is talking about you like you're a genius."
"Me? How so?"
"According to that big, bald ancient, you had a detailed set of tactics for evading pursuit and combating the new enemy cavalry," Tyndall chuckled. "He was so impressed that he had me describe the whole procedure to the men at dinner last night while you and Brendel were in conference. Now everyone thinks you're a military prodigy."
"Everyone must have been drinking heavily," dismissed Rondal.
"Any sign of patrols still searching for us?" "Falyar returned this morning from a sweep along the main road, but not one scrag. I've scried the area too. I think we lost them. Brendel wants to send a squad of rangers to permanently occupy Faerûn, though, and find another such decoy refuge to the east, and a place further south for a line of retreat, in case Maramor is endangered."
"I know," sighed Rondal tiredly as he sipped his ale. "I'm the one who suggested it to him.
The idea is to set up a network of clandestine outposts of royal commandos all across northern Gilmora. Decentralized, small and easy to abandon little bases, using them for intelligence gathering, civilian rescue and counterinsurgency, more or less what we've been doing the last few days."
"That doesn't sound like a very decisive measure," Tyndall said, making a face.
He preferred an old-fashioned charge to all of this thoughtful consideration.
"It isn't meant to be," agreed Rondal.
"The Gavanni are preparing for a push south into the rest of Gilmora next year, and the only castle big enough to stop them flat is Darkfaller, away to the south. With those siege worms at their disposal, they'll be able to open up anything smaller than a baronial castle like a chamber pot lid, and a bunch of lightly armed commandos hiding in the bushes is supposed to stop them?" asked Tyndall with a snort.
"No,"
Rondal agreed. "The commandos are to clear the way, discover their routes, disrupt their slaving operations, and mostly to observe and report. Prepare the battlefield against next spring's offensive. If you are destined to fight a foe," he said, quoting some ancient general he'd read about at Raylancourt, "then preparing the battlefield ahead of time is just good sense. The commandos will disrupt and observe, but they'll also be learning how to fight the Gavanni. You have to admit, those fell hound riders weren't like the Gavanni we saw in Beauval." Tyndall shook his head in agreement.
"They're changing.
3 years and they're changing. First the hairless ones, then the hobgoblins, now these little brutes. And they have men working for them now," Rondal reminded him. "That presents some ugly problems, but it also presents some lovely opportunities."
"Now you're making my head hurt," Tyndall said.
"How are human collaborators a good thing? Because up to now we haven't had a hope of infiltrating them. We can't exactly disguise ourselves as goblins, but if they have men working for them freely, then we can turn some of those men. You've studied blue magic a bit. You know it doesn't work as well on goblins and other non-humans, but a truth-telling on a collaborator would be a lot easier, and getting a spy into their councils will be much, much simpler.
I doubt the dead god is going to be sharing pillow talk with any of us big folk," Tyndall said sourly.
"That doesn't mean that they won't overhear things. Intelligence is about taking seemingly unrelated facts and weaving them together. Those facts may not seem important on their own, but..." Tyndall looked at him, impressed. "You really did learn a lot at Raylancourt." It was Rondal's turn to make a face. "I got my ass kicked a lot at Raylancourt, but intelligence is easy compared to other areas of warfare. Command, for instance," he sighed.
"Oh, come on," Tyndall protested. "I've been on my best behaviour.
Mostly," he added.
"Actually," Rondal agreed, "you haven't been nearly the pain in my ass I thought you would be. But everything else, being responsible for the unit, making sure everyone gets fed, keeping the roads clear. Dear Ish's rosy nips, it's added a year to me in a month.
And then there is the matter of... Belsie," Tyndall reminded him. "I made her show me the hidey hole she hid in when the goblins came. She's right. There was room for just one person. I couldn't even get both of us in there, and I tried. But there was also that hoard she mentioned, a fair bit of silver and some gold. Just what are we going to do about her? We could have her hung for what she did to Alwa, not to mention impersonating a noble. But now that Alwa is dead, the only ones who know the truth are the three of us. You mean the three of us who happened to share a bed the night before last? Rundle shot back. It wasn't much of a bed, Tyndall chuckled mirthlessly. Are you regretting what we did? I'm still wondering why we did it.
Why?
Tyndall asked, his eyes wide. Ron, we escaped with our lives. Barely. We freed a bunch of people from certain death, and lightly gave them an uncertain one. We are only human. Ishii grants her blessing to us to help us bear such burdens. Balsi needed us, Ron. I needed it. And I'd bet the tip of my wand that you found it somewhat relieving and not entirely unpleasant. So the question now is, are you willing to put a noose around the neck of a maid you've bedded? He asked accusingly.
I... Ron, it's not my call. You are the commander here, not me.
It's my goat, he reflected bitterly. It sounds like you're enjoying that for once.
It's not enjoyment,
Tyndall corrected. It's relief that I'm not the one who has to decide what to do with her. I wouldn't want to be in your boots for anything. So what would you do? Rundle challenged, rising and dressing. If this was your goat.
Me?
I'd likely allow the maid to slip away while I was otherwise occupied, Tyndall suggested slyly. Maybe with a purse to help her on her way, but I'd spare her the gallows. You'd let her go without being held accountable, Rundle asked. He was pretty certain that was what Tyn would do.
It's a war zone,
Tyndall reminded him. She was desperate. So yeah, that's what I would do. He stared at Rundle a moment while he pulled his mantle over his shoulders.
Is that what you would do?
He asked expectantly.
I'm not you,
Rundle sighed. Sometimes, honestly, I wish I was. Life would be easier. Bring her by this afternoon, at the third bell. I'll make my decision then. And Tyn, he added casually, make sure she's here. This is my goat, not yours. Tyndall swallowed.
Yes, Commander,
he said. And for once, Rundle didn't detect a hint of sarcasm. By the time the third bell afternoon had tolled, Rundle had already accomplished much. He had communicated repeatedly, mind to mind, with various High Magi, and he had consulted with Marshal Brendol about the new commander at Maramore. One of the things he'd learnt that morning was that he was being replaced almost immediately, and he and Tyndall were being reassigned. Another officer would take command here and continue to prosecute the war. That made disposing of Belsey's case all the more pressing. In a matter of hours, it would no longer be his duty or his prerogative. His replacement, a captain from the third, had arrived and would take command on the morrow. He had prepared the room after his consultations, and he did so mindful that his was once her uncle's room, and that this would likely be the last time she would see it, or Maramore, in her life. We're on our way, Tyndall sent him, mind to mind, just after the third bell rung. Rundle thanked him and took a seat behind the small table, where he had prepared two silver goblets and a bottle of wine, the best wine he could scrounge. In front of him were two chairs, each with a bag at its feet. One was a campaign bag, tough, durable leather, suitable for travelling on the open road. The other was a lady's travelling bag, of finer leather and elaborately embroidered. Tyndall knocked, and then opened the door, escorting the frightened-looking girl into the chamber. Rundle swallowed but forced his face into a mask of impassivity. Tyndall closed the door behind them and stood in front of it. Belsey walked hesitantly between the chairs, her shoulders trembling.
"You have put me in a difficult position," he began, not inviting her to sit in either chair. "You have misrepresented yourself, for whatever reason, impersonated a noble and attempted, through subterfuge, to even attempt murder. And yes, I use the term, to procure an estate not rightfully yours. You have also committed acts of bravery and cleverness that have aided our stay here, and aided the war effort. I cannot consider the former acts without also considering the latter. The key to what I must decide is just whom I am addressing, Maid Belsey or Lady Arcella of Maramore.
Does my name matter so?
She asked bitterly.
It does,
Rundle nodded. For what name you are called will decide your fate. If you are Belsey, Then even if I were to forget your crimes in consideration of your service and bravery, you would be sent forth from Maramore with the next caravan south. Whence you go from there would be your own choosing, as a free woman. But so would your protection become your own responsibility. You would be free to live what life you could make for yourself. But if you are Arcella, last scion of Maramore, then the matter shifts dramatically. If you are a noble woman, then you would be escorted safely out of the war zone in the company and under the guard of the next caravan south, thence to Barabel. You would be entitled to protection and even succour, at the expense of your father's liege or his liege, if necessary. And you would be entitled to the hoard secreted by your sire for that purpose, as well as any title or interest in Maramore. Further, you would be entitled to certain compensation from the crown for our use of Maramore as an outpost. A modest amount, but one which, perhaps, would support you for a time.
So which am I?
She asked, eyeing him intently.
Belsie or Arcella?
There was a lot in that question. Doubt, anxiety, fear, greed, and emotion so subtle Rondal could not begin to imagine them.
That's the question, agreed Rondal. Who better to answer it than you?
What?
She asked.
What?
Tyndall asked, startled.
Who are you?
Belsie or Arcella? Justice says you must face accountability for what you have done. Mercy dictates that you be spared your life after your assistance. If I am to be the one responsible for solving this problem, then I leave the responsibility for how I solve it to you.
That is only fair. To me? You want me to decide?
She asked, puzzled. It isn't as easy as you might think. Rondal continued evenly. On the one hand, you can be poor, common, and free. On the other hand, you could be wealthy, relatively, noble, but constrained by the rules of that nobility. You would lose your freedom, in other words. Perhaps a minor thing for you, or perhaps it means everything. That will depend entirely on just whom you are, Belsie or Arcella.
So you want me to choose?
She repeated dully as she considered the possibility. Not at an instant, conceded Rondal. I am going to take my friend here downstairs for a drink before the fire, to toast the last night of my command, for we have been reassigned. Sir Varagon, captain of the Royal Third, arrived this morning from the south. He shall be in charge of this province at dawn tomorrow. Indeed, I shall be escorting he and Marshal Brendal to this office after our farewell toast to give over to him the notes of my command. When I do, I shall pour wine and either introduce Maid Belsie or Lady Arcella, depending upon which chair you are seated in. Once I make that introduction, he said warningly, forever thus shall you be known. He has given you a choice, Tyndall said sharply, far more of one than you would have given poor Alwa. Noble or common, lady or maiden, you decide. But you must live with the consequences of that choice. Forever. The girl's eyes were stricken as she realized what a profound decision she had ahead of her. Rondal smiled, calmly. I think that, under the circumstances, I am being more than fair to you.
But you laid with me,
she whispered. It would be indiscreet of me to consider whether such a fact influenced my decision, and in which way, Rondal said idly. A good night is never indiscreet, Tyndall agreed.
But you loved me,
she said, her eyes wide. Did I? Rondal asked, his eyes narrowing the smallest bit. If I did, that love was not returned. I will not extend my hand indefinitely, my lady, and not to a maid who has her eyes on another. I deserved better, nor one of dubious character. She blushed at that, but could not answer. You have much to discuss with your conscience and the gods. We shall leave you to it. He nodded to Tyndall, who opened the door for him dutifully, then closed it behind them. Lock it, commanded Rondal, mind to mind. Tyndall looked at him, and then looked at the key in the lock. He made no move to lock it. If he was to do it, Rondal realized, Ron would have to voice the order out loud. Leaving the door unlocked gave Belsie, Arcella, a third option. Tyndall's option, to slip away and forge a life apart from either identity.
Oh, Ishi's tits,
he swore, rolling his eyes in resignation. Let's get a drink. It was nearly 2 hours before Tyndall and Rondol returned with Marshal Brendol and Sir Varrigan. Varrigan was not alone. He had come with Master Denga of the Horkan Order. Denga had been recently granted one of Horka's Seven, one of the seven Alka-Alon-crafted spheres of Irionite that not only provided incredible power, but supermastery of those arcane forces as well. As Sir Varrigan looked every inch the professional military commander, Master Denga appeared as the epitome of the Master Warmage, able to handle that level of power with no trouble. He was a tall man, broad-shouldered, with a clean-shaven jaw like an anvil. He had a permanent scowl on his face and appraised everything and everyone he saw in tactical terms. They may have been knights magi, but he was a warrior mage. He may have sprung from noble birth and taken a knighthood for his actions on the field of Cambrian, but he was a man of battle, not a gentleman of action, like many of these Gilmoran knights. He was more than a little intimidating. They both were, and Marshal Brendol didn't help. If it hadn't been for Rondol's relative rank and the fact that he was retiring his post, he might have been intimidated. Instead, he graciously briefed the men on the magical and mundane defences of his outpost and delivered a succinct overview on the situation in the countryside. When in doubt, Rondol always felt he could fall back on the reliability of facts. When the time came to give over operations of the post, Rondol led Varrigan, Brendol, Denga, and Tyndall back up to the former Lord Solar, where the girl was waiting, where Lady Arcella was waiting. The girl, born as Belsie, was seated in the right-hand chair, dressed in a richly embroidered green velvet surcoat, her sleeves tied against the chill and her mantle pulled around her. A silver noble's circlet held down a demure white wimple. "Gentlemen, may I present Lady Arcella of Maramore, last surviving scion of this distinguished house," Rondol said smoothly. "You may find this remarkable. She slipped away from her family's retreat on the basis that her house should be represented at Maramore, regardless of the unfriendly new neighbours. Unfortunately, they perished during the Dragonfall, leaving her behind unbeknownst to anyone. When we arrived, she was all alone, ready to impale me with an arbalest, thinking I was a goblin. You have to admit, the resemblance is uncanny," Tyndall shot. "My lady," Marshal Brendol said with a respectable bow, "your courage does you credit, though perhaps not your wisdom." "She yet lives," grunted Varrigan, "while her kin are dead. 'Tis difficult to fault such fortune."
"My lords," she said, curtsying prettily, "I fear the hospitality of my house suffers of late, but please feel welcome."
"Your house no more, I'm afraid," Marshal Brendol said, pouring himself a glass of wine and then one for Arcella. "It has been rendered to the crown for military use. Not that you'll find the estates that productive these days," he said, laughing at his own pale joke.
"So I am to be sent away?" Arcella asked, her eyes flashing toward Rondol and Tyndall.
"Better," Rondol said, pouring more wine from the bottle. "I had Commander Telamon look into the matter as a personal favour to me, in recognition of all you have done for the war effort here at Maramore," he said smoothly. "And it seems you are not entirely alone in this world after all." Arcella stopped her cup before it touched her lip.
"I am not?" she asked, alarmed.
"Nay, my lady," Rondol said, smiling. "I bear good news. You have an aunt, Lady Yester, the eldest half-sister of your father, from his sire's first wife, long married to Lord Shand of Longmarsh, a coastlord of some means." Rondol sounded pleased with himself as he sipped the wine and watched the expression on Arcella's face as he revealed the good tidings.
"An aunt?"
"A half-aunt, if you want to be technical," Tyndall pointed out, "but a blood relative, and one in line to inherit your sire's holdings and estates."
"And you?"
"Me?" "Of course, my dear," Marshal Brendol said warmly. "Your wardship falls to your nearest living relative upon your sire's demise. In this case, that would be your Aunt Yester. It will be her duty to take you in, protect you, finish your education, and find you a suitable marriage."
"Oh, what?"
"It's her duty," soothed Rondol. "Well, technically, it is the duty of your sire's liege. But since he is probably dead—"
"Oh, no, he's very dead," Tyndall assured him.
"Since he's very dead, Lady Yester is now responsible for arranging a marriage worthy of your rank and station."
"A marriage?"
Arcella repeated, dully. Indeed. Of course, the reparation the Crown pays you for its use of Maramore, in addition to whatever assets the estate may hold in the South, plus the hoard your father left you, altogether it should provide a handsome dowry. And there are plenty of poor country knights willing to take a young girl off a busy household's hands for the right price. Arcella looked tormented by the idea, but she also realized that making a scene in front of the military commander of the region would do her no favors. She swallowed grimly and managed a meek smile.
"I do look forward to meeting my aunt," she said formally. "Thank you, gentlemen, for discovering her. I feel much safer knowing I have kin with whom I might take refuge."
"Well spoken," approved Marshal Brendal. "My lady, why don't you go ready your baggage? We depart at noon tomorrow to meet with a patrol headed south near Kiplan. From there it is but a week to Barrowbell and then downriver by barge to the coastlands. You could be in your family's bosom within a month, and wed by Yule. Is she willing?"
"Is she willing?"
agreed Tyndall, as he watched Arcella struggle with the idea. "May she favour you with a giant of a man for a husband who will give you many, many children."
"You are such an asshole,"
Rondel said to Tyndall, mind to mind, as Arcella's eyes bulged.
"She broke your heart," Tyndall pointed out. "I don't mind watching her squirm a little."
"Clearly."
After finishing a single cup of wine, as propriety dictated, Lady Arcella excused herself. The boys let a few off-color comments about her newbar status by their new comrades pass. Rondel did not feel that defending the honor of a woman like Arcella would be a credit to his own.
"So, where are you being stationed, Commander?"
asked the Marshal, moving from wine to spirits.
"Yes, just where are we being stationed, Commander?"
asked Tyndall, happily accepting a cup.
"Master Minolin has had Commander Terleman pull us from the front for a mission," Rondel reported.
"A secret mission. I have no idea what, just that we're supposed to meet up with Sir Festeran at Fillersby with a caravan, proceed south overland to some place in the lower Riverlands, and then return to Sevendor."
"A secret mission," repeated Tyndall, "in the Riverlands, with Sir Fess."
"He's a knight mage of sorts," explained Rondel to Brendel and Varagon. "A sport, not a true mage, but he has a few talents that are useful, and he is well-trained. A good, solid fellow. What he has to do with the task, I know not. But then the spellmonger keeps secrets like barons keep mistresses."
"Your master has quite a reputation in many matters," agreed Marshal Brendel. "I've yet to meet the man, yet by all accounts, all hope for victory in this war lies upon his shoulders. I've seen what you folk," he said, indicating the three magi, "can do on the battlefield. You won't hear of me charging a dragon, but is he up to the task? Can he find a way to slay the Goblin King?"
Rondel looked at Tyndall, and while he hoped some soothing and reassuring words would flow from him, mind to mind, his fellow was just as challenged to answer the question as he.
"If he is not, my Lord Marshal," Rondel finally said,
"then no other man is better suited, and it will not be because he did not try everything in his power. Our master is committed to the cause of Sherul's destruction, and we are committed to aiding him however we may," he answered.
"Well spoken," murmured Varagon, taking a third sip of liquor.
"Indeed," agreed Brendel.
"Then let us drink to the health of the spellmonger before we retire, and pray the gods that he has the stones to see this through."
Tyndall went to bed shortly thereafter, citing exhaustion. Rondel found he had trouble sleeping, and after seeing Varagon and Brendel to proper quarters, instead of finding his own bed, he found himself walking through the manor's courtyard, going in no particular direction.
"Sir Rondel,"
came a quiet, insistent, and female voice from the shadows.
"I had hoped to see you here before you slept."
"Arcella," he answered, invoking maid sight to find her in the darkness.
"What do you want to speak with me about?"
"What do I want to speak with you about? You spared my life and gave me station today. You don't feel that merits a word or two?"
"Mayhap," conceded Rondel uncomfortably.
"I didn't do it for you, really. It was just the best thing for everyone."
"You didn't have to do it at all,"
Arcella said, taking his arm. "I'm not certain I did you any favors," he warned. "I wasn't joking about your aunt. She has 6 daughters and 4 sons. She's not going to like a spare fosterling around. She's going to want to marry you off quickly.
That is my battle to fight," she shrugged. "I could have been dead by nightfall. If the price of that is some fat, hairy old knight heaving his pasty body on top of mine every night for the next 20 years, then it is not too dear a price to pay."
"So you say now," chuckled Rondal. "You have yet to meet the man."
"Goddess willing, he's handsome, rich, and kind," she sighed. "But if not, well, I know how to use an arbalest," she reminded him. "Accidents happen."
Rondal suppressed a shudder at how casually she said it. He told himself she was joking, but he wasn't quite convinced.
"So you really aren't that upset about it?"
She shrugged. "I lost Maramore, but it wasn't ever really mine, save for a few weeks when no one else was around. I gained a name and a title, and well, even after a fashion. My others in my family were not as lucky."
"But you could have had freedom," Rondal pointed out.
"Freedom? To what? Starve?"
she snorted.
"Do you have any idea what I would have to do to survive in the Southlands?" "Well, no," Rondal admitted. "Neither do I. But I can't imagine it would be pleasant. Just how many young girls of common blood from northern Gilmora are begging in the streets of Barrowbell? Or worse? How many are on the road, fleeing for their lives with only what they have on their backs? You gave me a chance, Rondal. Not a good one, but a chance. As hard as the consequences might be to bear, you gave me a chance at a life. Maybe even a good life."
Rondal waved at the sentry beginning his patrol of the grounds as he walked by. His last night as commander here, he realized. Arcella smiled.
"In a way, I'm glad things worked out this way. I know you probably don't think much of me, but I do admire you very much, Rondal. You have my respect, even if I could not give you my heart."
"Don't.
I wanted to,"
she interrupted.
"I did. I swear to Ishii, I did. I wanted to be rescued by a handsome knight and taken away, or have Maramore restored to me by him. And then you showed up, the answer to my prayer, and for a while, I almost loved you. I really wanted to. But
then Tyndall showed up," Rondal said sourly.
"It was more than that,"
Arcella insisted.
"I was terrified you'd find out my secret and have me thrown out of the gate. Or worse, I feared you were going to be replaced, and then when he and his men showed up, I thought you had been."
"So you never had real feelings for me," Rondal said bitterly.
"I had great feelings for you," corrected Arcella. "But I had to do what I felt was best for me. That wasn't you, or at least that's what my heart told me."
"And now your heart is leading you to some smelly, hairy, fat old country knight who gets to rut with you," Rondal said sourly. "How is that better than me?"
"It's not," laughed Arcella. "But if that is to be my fate,
will you at least grant me a few sordid memories to carry with me into my marriage bed?"
she asked, pulling him to her tightly. He glanced around, but they were alone save for the guards.
"I thought you didn't love me." "I do not," she agreed, "but I am not ungrateful, and you have proven a far fairer friend than I deserve. While you may not move my heart, Sir Rondal, I cannot fault you as a gentleman of great honour, honour that should be rewarded by a noble lady.
From what I understand, high-born women are not wont to share their favour so lightly," he murmured into her ear as they walked through the autumn mist.
"Lucky for you, I wasn't high-born,"
she said, pulling him into an embrace.
"And don't think I do share my favours lightly. You are the worthiest knight I have ever met, my lord, and you honoured me with your attention. I was a fool to dismiss it so lightly."
She kissed him. He almost asked how she felt about him now, but his lips were busy and in truth he feared the answer. He knew she was not for him, as much as he liked her, as much as she aroused his ardour. She had failed to gain and keep his respect. The woman he gave his heart to would have to be worthy, far worthier than Arcella. But that did not mean Arcella was broken. She just wasn't for him. At least, not after tonight. He broke the kiss. "It occurs to me that no one has inspected the secluded cotton shed at the far end of the manor for goblins in the last day or so. I would be remiss in my duty if I allowed an infiltrator to escape notice by hiding there. Would Milady wish to go with me to investigate? I promise to protect you." Lady Arcella of Maramore smiled contentedly and took his arm.
"Sir Rondal," I am ever at your service.